Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, before we start the show, Mark Jeftabek over at EasyDNS is doing something really cool. He wrote a book, Unassailable, which is the definitive guide on how to protect yourself from de-platform attacks, cancel culture, and other online disasters. Because of coronavirus and the new threats to our freedom, Mark has made the book free. Mark wants to make sure that those with dissenting views can get the information out there without being deplatformed. So check out the book. It's in the episode description. It's a great read, and if you have content online, this is the ultimate manual on how to protect yourself from being censored. And if you don't have content online, it's still a really interesting read about culture wars, online censorship, and cancel culture. So make sure you go over and check it out. The link is in the description. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, everybody? Let this be part of your welcome. The other part will come eventually. I don't even remember whose show this is anymore or what day it is. We're all going mad together, but I get to talk to my good friend, Michael Malice, and that is always a reason for celebration. How are you, sir?
I'm great.
Very good.
I just got a text message today from a sushi joint that's near me, and they're opening up again. So I'm like, all right, I think the worst is past. Once the gyms are open, it'll be great. So I'll be very happy then.
Yeah, it does seem like the worst in terms of the virus has passed, in terms of the drama. Yes. Well, at least for right now, who the hell knows what the future holds.
Sure.
And it does seem like some states have reopened sectors of the economy. It looks like we're going to get a partial reopening of New York soon. As you just said, you're kind of obviously happy, as we all are, to, you know, eat at a restaurant you like and stuff like that. What do you think? Are you concerned about opening or what it's going to look like or the virus or anything?
I'm not concerned the slightest. I mean, like, you were the one, you did the homework. It's funny because, like, people, I would think of the two of us would think I'm the cerebral one, but you're the one actually doing the homework and I'm just talking out of my ass. And when you were just dropping these numbers in terms of percentage of people who are actually dying, let alone, first of all, there's like so many steps before someone dies, and God forbid that happens. Like, I don't think it's cute or funny, or like you're going to be making some eggs to make an omelet. It's 50,000 people is no joke. Let's be serious there. But let's also at the same time, keep in mind for someone like me, or for most people, it's gonna be, okay, first I've gotta get gravely ill, you know, then I'm gonna be in the hospital, then they're gonna have to not be able to take care of me, then I'm dying. I mean, there's stages, right? So if we get it to a point, and I've mentioned this, I think, to you before, and I mentioned other cases, Marianne Williamson, you know, the author, presidential candidate, when she was in LA during the time of AIDS and everyone was dropping like flies, and they had no hope. And she just said, this is one of the most profound things I've ever read. She sat them down and she goes, yeah, I'm not saying it's going to be cured tomorrow, but can't we hope it's going to get to be like diabetes? Like, can't we hope that like, it's really going to suck for the rest of your life and maybe they'll cut off your foot? And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can get my head around that. So if we could get it to a point where it's like, yeah, if you get it, you're going to be in the hospital for a month, you know, on a tube. It's like, okay. Like the choice between that and death, it's not even close.
Yeah.
So I'm not too concerned. The one thing I'm already rolling my eyes at, and I know you are as well, is no matter what decision is being made at any point, people have been trained, many in the media pretend that trade-offs don't matter. And that as soon as one person dies, like, see, you know, you shouldn't have done it. You killed it. The blood of little Timmy's on your hands. But then if they wouldn't reopen, it's like, look, this guy's out of work. You know, yeah. His homelessness is on your hands. They have it both ways. The problem with the trade-off is neither choice is ideal. This is the universal norm. I'd rather have my money and the car. Can't have both. So I'm going to choose one, whichever, you know what I mean? And when you're talking about life and death and unemployment, these are really stark choices. So that's my concern, because it's going to be months of, especially in an election year, months of just logically transparent bullshit on an even higher, because it's going to be worse than normal, because it's going to be wrapped in self-righteousness and like, oh my God, all these people are dead because of you. If I were president, I'm not saying if I were in charge, they wouldn't be dead, but at least, well, it's just like, just stop.
Yeah.
And we're not going to be able to get them to stop. Me and you're just going to be sitting here banging our heads.
Yes, that's we can be sure of that. It's really you know, like you said, dealing with trade-offs and dealing with choices that are both bad, which yeah. Unfortunately is the situation that we're in now, is just it's not as attractive to people as moral certainty as
right.
That, you know, outrage. And that's what we're going to get. I was speaking of the presidential election. So there's a few things in the news that have I thought were pretty interesting over the last few days. And I'm curious what you think about this. Did you see, because I know you are you love Twitter and you're one of the best accounts on Twitter to follow. If anybody doesn't follow Michael Malice, or if you've already been blocked by Michael Malice,
you tried to follow me.
At least 40% of the people listening, you're missing out. If you don't follow them, go follow them. If you've been blocked, there's nothing I can do.
Well,
and by the way,
open an anonymous window, a private window, and then you can see it.
Yeah, I've gotten at least a dozen DMs of people asking me to help them get unblocked by you. And the answer is no. I can't help you. Michael has decided to block you. You did something, you messed up. Maybe he was wrong to do it, but I'm not going to convince him to unblock you.
There was one person who got unblocked, maybe more, I think one. And he was like a Gas Digital subscriber, so he reached out to me through that. And he had this long thing about how, like, for me, let's talk about this, because I think there's something abuse. We all are going to do things that suck in our lives. And we're going to look back and we're going to be like, I really blew it. And for me, one of the worst emotions, one of the worst emotions, easily top five, is guilt. Because you try to think of yourself as a good person and try to do right, try to live the values. And then you look back and you're like, no. This is a case where I did not do that unambiguously. And, you know, my approach for an apology is you have to acknowledge what you did. Say, this is what I did wrong. And because it's a leap of faith for that person to apologize to you, you have to explain what you learned, why you wouldn't do it a second time. Like, okay, I was under this misimpression. This was totally wrong of me. At the same time, you were the one who were the butt of this, and that screwed up, and that's my fault. And then it's up to them whether they will accept your apology or not. A lot of people think where they're like, oh, you know, I took a shit in your mouth. Well, I said I'm sorry, so now if you don't accept my apology, you're an asshole. You can accept someone's apology and still not trust their judgment, not want to have anything to do with them. So one person, he had this long, not long, but it was like, it was really heartfelt, and I'm like, all right, I'll unblock you. And whatever. And the next thing that happens, he almost got reblocked. He fucking goes on Twitter and he's like, oh, I got Michael Malice to unblock me, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know, you don't tell them the recipe, because this is something that I did for you because you were special and it meant something what you had written. And now you're just telling it to everybody. So I almost reblocked him immediately.
So the lesson is don't unblock people once you've blocked them.
Yes.
Keep them blocked.
Yes.
Go with your first instinct on
There was a guy named, I forgot who his name, but this is what inspired me, where he said, Dan Harmon. I don't know who that is, but someone tweeted at me about him. And they said, I miss Dan Harmon's presence on Twitter because his policy seemed to be, whether you like me or not, I don't care how much you agree with me. If you annoy me once, I'm not going to take the chance that you're going to annoy me again. Now, I'm not that extreme. If I recognize someone's name, I won't ever block them. I'll be like, what are you doing? You know, or I'll try to get some more information. But I'm also block a lot less than you think. It's like, I did the math. It's less than 0.1%.
Oh, it's the same as the COVID fatality rate.
Yeah,
there you go.
But
it's
this
not that big of a deal.
This is for people who don't deserve it.
Okay, so what I wanted to ask you about on Twitter, did you see the hashtag that was trending of Fire Chris Hayes?
Oh, yeah.
So for anybody who doesn't know, Chris Hayes is he's like the male version of Rachel Maddow. He's male. He's the female version of Rachel Maddow.
Yes,
I knew I was close. I was circling it. He's an MSNBC host, and he's, I guess, a step to the left of the average MSNBC host is probably fair to say. But he's still kind of a neoliberal corporatist, you know, but he's kind of under the guise of being the left-wing voice there, or one of the more left-wing voices there. So he did a show, or he did a segment on his show on this Tara Reid accusation. Tara Reid was a staffer for Joe Biden. She initially came out and claimed that he kind of touched her inappropriately in the ways that we've seen Joe Biden touch a million men, women, and children inappropriately. But then she came out more recently and actually said, no, it was like a full-on sexual assault, that he like grabbed her
by the pussy.
He trumped her. He trumped her real good. So anyway, there's been silence from the entire network of MSNBC on this issue, that nobody's reported on it. And Chris Hayes did the other night. And this has resulted in a huge pushback from liberal Twitter.
Blue-pilled,
Yes, but like blue-pilled, not left-wing, but liberal. Because the lefties don't like Joe Biden very much. They're still heartbroken over Bernie Sanders for the most part. But he's getting tremendous pushback, and it was trending, this Fire Chris Hayes hashtag. And I don't know. I mean, there's so many just blatant examples of hypocrisy and insanity that anyone would be calling on him to someone to be fired for reporting an accusation of sexual assault, especially from MSNBC liberals who have been riding the Me Too moment for the last few years. So it's really just quite striking to me. What did you think of it?
I covered it. I broke this down at length today on Nightshade, and let me break it down for you because I've been looking at this from several angles because it's fascinating. First, before I get into anything, I believe Biden, because I think the way he behaves in public has often been the way he behaves in private. I don't think there's something sexual in the way he's approaching these kids. I think it's creepy, but I don't think it is some kind of sexual undertones. And the way he nuzzles kids is the same way he nuzzles women. So I do think he has an issue with space, and I do think he has an issue with inappropriate touching. And I do think that would make many people uncomfortable. At the same time, I don't think it's a thin line between someone who kisses someone on the head and puts their arm around them as all kind of like a puppy grabbing someone in by their genitals. I think that's a very big distinction. At the same time, this Tara Reid situation, there is apparently contemporaneous evidence that she made this complaint. This is where it gets interesting. So she says that in 1993, she filed with the Senate office and complained to three people in his office. Okay. Those complaints, if they are, and she doesn't have a copy of this, okay? Those complaints, that complaint she filed, if it exists, is being held by the University of Delaware Library. I believe that's the place where Joe Biden's papers are being held. They're being held under lock and key, and they had said earlier they're not releasing anything until he's retired from public life. So if it's there, it would be there. The New York Times went and talked to three women in his, those women in his office. And they all said something very interesting. They said, we have no memory of this, which made me take a step back. There was a Vanity Fair article about Amy Klobuchar. I don't remember when it was, maybe it's 2018, something like that. And the article is about, like, she is the worst Senate boss in the Senate. Now, binary thinkers can't wrap their heads around this, but there's many Democratic senators who are really nice bosses and many who are horrible. And there's many Republicans who are total a-holes and Republicans who are great people to work for. It, this is a personality issue. And it was so bad, you know, and her staffers would get emails from her in all caps in the middle of the night, in the very abusive language, so on and so forth. And people get a reputation. DC is incestuous. Everyone talks.
Yeah.
It was to the point where, according to Vanity Fair, Harry Reid, who was at different times majority leader, minority leader, head of the Democrats in the Senate, had to sit her down and be like, you got to cut the crap. This is outrageous. You can't do this. And when Vanity Fair asked Harry Reid, he said, his office said, oh, he has no memory of this conversation. It's like, yeah, I figured out. So they didn't say this didn't happen. They said they have no memory of this, which is a way to cover your ass in case there's documentation that comes out later. I do not think it's plausible that three women would have the same response. We have no memory. One of them would say it didn't happen. They said, we don't remember. This is a very Washington, a just legalistic way of covering your ass and you know, whatever. So what was amazing is what CNN, shockingly, and there's a lot of theories we could talk about why, has been covering this. And Nancy Pelosi was on with, I forget the woman's name, and was asked about these allegations. And she literally says, I had played the clips back to back coincidentally, Nightshade. She goes, the New York Times asked women in Biden's office at the time, and all three explicitly said, no, it never happened. And it's like, no, that's not what they said, Nancy. You're lying. You're lying. Yeah. Stacey Abrams was on with Don Lemon, and she was asked about this. And he goes, isn't it hypocrisy that you're believing Biden here and you believe Christine Blasey Ford? And she goes, no, because the New York Times investigates Harry Reid's allegations. They found that they were not credible, but Christine Blasey Ford was never investigated. It's like, how bad of a liar do you have to be if you're going to tell me they didn't do everything in their power to corroborate Christine Blasey Ford's story? I'm surprised this isn't going away. There's two scenarios. One is, thanks to social media, they can't sweep these things under the rug. Or there is a rift, possibly increasing, possibly decreasing, between the corporate press and the political parties. And the corporate press is realizing, look, we're losing cred. And we've been beating this drum about Kavanaugh for a year. Like, we have to have some measure of integrity. And it could also be a measure of, we're not that gung-ho for Biden. So if we get rid of him, there's going to be someone else that could easily fit his seat. I said, yeah. I'll just say one more thing.
Sure.
Here's the sign. Will you know that they're getting rid of Biden? Is when you're going to see articles attacking Andrew Cuomo in the media, because Hillary Clinton will be planting them. Because if they get rid of Biden, it's going to be Cuomo or Hillary, and she's going to have to poison the well. That will be your first cue that they're seriously thinking about getting rid of him. And I bet you, I would literally bet money that you are 100% right, that they had that meeting already where they said, all right, I don't know if they said when, but if we get rid of Biden, how are we going to do this, guys?
Yeah, no, I'm sure they must. I mean, these people are not, you know, say whatever you will about them, but they're not stupid.
Right.
And they've got to be looking at Joe Biden, his performance every single time he's on in front of the camera.
Just a superb performance, they're like, all right, let's suppose, God forbid, something bad happens to him. What do we do then, guys? They have to have a contingency plan. They've got to have a contingency plan for Trump, I'm sure.
Yes, but especially when you also start looking at his performance, then you really go like, man, we need this contingency plan. Now, one of the, I think the thing that scares a lot of these corporate press types about this story is that it probably isn't enough to sink Joe Biden, but it is enough to damage him. And it is enough to do what it's already done, which is just display the despicable hypocrisy. It's not just hypocrisy. It's hypocrisy of the absolute worst kind. And it exposes something, something very dark, which is that, look, if you're going to find a way to support Joe Biden, even though there's this allegation, and you were at all one of the people beating the drums about Kavanaugh, what it demonstrates for everyone to see is what people like me and you were talking about at the time of the Kavanaugh hearings, which is that this is not actually a concern for women that is driving this. This is a power play.
Yes.
And they're using the veil of I care about women who are victims of sexual assault to gain power. Now, that is a pretty red pill moment for a lot of people to see, because that takes a certain type of human being to do that. Look.
It's not, I'm just going to one thing. I don't think it was even Blasey Ford per se. It was the Julie Swetnick stuff.
That was
the one where people were like, okay, this is blatantly a grab for power. Because Christine Ford, you can see people are like, all right, let's hear this out. This is something I might not be comfortable with. When you have, he was at parties and I was multiply gang raped, and he wasn't even a participant in this gang rape, and they're putting this one front and center, you can't look at that and be like, okay, this is some, any semblance of reality or decency. This is just brazen.
Yes, completely agree. But even if we're looking at the Christine Ford one, I mean, look, she had next to nothing. I mean, in terms of like actual evidence that this has happened. Now, I'm not saying that means you dismiss her outright. I mean, honestly, I don't know exactly what we're supposed to do with these accusations. If you come out and say 40 years ago, some guy threw me down on a bed at a party, I can't tell you the date, I can't tell you the place, you know, I can't give you any specifics. I can name three people who were there. All three of those people can't corroborate the story. That's not much to go on.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that she's lying. It just means that what are you as an observer supposed to do with that information? We're supposed to act and not give this guy a job that he was nominated for based off that. But if you were all in, like, yes, we absolutely have to not put this guy on the Supreme Court. And then even further than that, they all said, or not all of them, but a lot of people said, we believe her. We're putting a sexual predator on the Supreme Court, yada, 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 yada. Now, if you do all that, and then Joe Biden has, look, I'm not saying it's basically to me the same situation. I don't know what the fuck happened, and I don't know who to believe, and I don't know what to do with this information. But she did work for Joe Biden. That isn't in dispute. Right. In the Christine Ford case, it was in dispute whether they had ever even met. There was no like real evidence of that. This is a more credible allegation. So the hypocrisy of these people is on full display. And there's actually been people on Twitter saying Chris Hayes is a Russian asset. Chris Hayes is working to get Trump elected. So, it's madness. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for the show, brand new sponsor we're thrilled to have on board, and that is Cushy Dreams. Cushy Dreams specializes in extraordinary CBD-rich hemp flower, aka bud, and pre-rolled CBD joints. Cushy Dreams is a new company with a full lineup of premium smokable CBD, shipping legally to all 50 states. Join the group of men and women who want to smoke their CBD. As a Gas Digital listener, you probably know about the great effects of CBD. If you don't, do a quick Google search. CBD has helped a lot of people with things like joint pain. It helps people with insomnia, inflammation, anxiety, a list of other ailments. And Cushy Dreams, you can smoke your CBD, which a lot of people prefer to do. It's grown in California and Oregon. Each plant is hand-selected by a team of experienced cannabis flower experts. The attention to detail is noticeable in every beautiful flower, 100% hand-trimmed, never machine-trimmed. They take the artisan approach. Every run is a small batch, independent lab-tested compliance and purity. Each batch is slow-cured for 2 to 4 weeks to guarantee maximum freshness and preserve flavor and cannabinoids. Cushy Dreams has CBD flower and pre-rolls. They come in specific indica sativa blends like Energy, Hustle, and Dream. If you love CBD and you love smoking, this is perfect for you. And if you go to cushydreams.com at checkout, make sure you use the promo code PROBLEM20 and you'll get 20% off your first order. Exclusive discount for Gas Digital listeners. No better offer out there. Smoke your CBD because you can. CushyDreams.com, promo code PROBLEM20 for 20% off your first order. All right, let's get back into the show.
There was a great meme I just put on my Instagram. Someone sent me yesterday on Twitter, and it's someone talking to an NPC, and the NPC goes, "We need to elect Joe Biden." And the person replies, "Make the case without mentioning Trump." And they just get angry. So it's very easy to say we need to get Trump out of office. But this, they have no card to play. There's a great quote. I've been doing a lot of research on my boy, Albert Camus, yesterday. And there's so many of his quotes that just, you know, just make me so giddy. And one of his is, "Those who lack the courage will always find a philosophy to justify it. I don't think Chris Hayes is particularly brave. Rachel Maddow, I'll give her credit too. I give her credit a lot. I think she's underrated and she's often attacked. She's nowhere near as bad as the people at CNN, in my opinion. She did a whole segment on Phyllis Schlafly when she died, which was very fair and downright laudatory. But she also went after MSNBC about all the cases that were, she did a whole thing. She goes, in this building, these things happened, and Ronan Farrow and so on and so forth. So she went after that as well. So what's amazing is all Chris Hayes said, I watched the monologue. He goes, listen, when these things come forward, our gut tells us, I like the person. I don't want this to be true. And you have to look at the evidence. And he goes, she had a neighbor at the time who she told. And the neighbor confirmed this. The mom calling into Larry King, supposedly filing a complaint. He goes, you can't just hand wave this away. And it's incumbent on us to, you know, to look at this sort of thing. Nothing he said would have upset literally anyone on any political aisle if he didn't mention an individual. If he had simply said, and obviously people read, like, read dog whistles into things like, oh, what you're saying is like, no, if he just said at face value, just because we like a celebrity doesn't mean they can't have done horrible things. And when things are alleged, you do have to look at the evidence. And I'm going to go full lefty feminist. This stuff is about power. It's not about party. And it's very well known, especially by anarchists of all stripes, that people in power get away with doing horrible things, that they get off on doing horrible things simply because they can. It's a sense of power. It's like the little kid pulling the, you know, burning ants with a magnifying glass or pulling the wings off of flies. You get that cheap thrill because you're more powerful than this other being. And yeah, this sort of thing happens all the time. One of the good things about the Me Too movement, and I know in a binary world we're supposed to be attacking it, is that there were a lot of women, you and I have talked about this, who felt, yeah, this shit's more common than you guys realize. And the reason we don't want to say anything is because on the one hand, it's not a big deal in that my life isn't ruined and now I think this guy's an asshole and I don't want his life to be ruined. On the other hand, yeah, it happened to me and it sucked. And yeah. I'm not going to pretend it didn't happen to me. And I'm not going to say I'm ruined for life, but it really was not a good day. And I think that's a very fair and reasonable situation. You know, so here's the other thing. It's like a lot of people on the right like to freak out and say racism doesn't exist or those days are over. I'm sorry. Like, it does exist. I'm not saying it's the worst problem on earth, but when it does exist, it really screws up someone day. There's an example I used in my book of a friend of mine. She was a waitress. She's Black. Her dad was ex-military. When they go to the restaurant, you know, they always get seat in the back. Or the waitress won't give them service because she thinks they're not going to tip. And she goes, that waitress probably is acting from experience. And she's saying this is a Black person. It still sucks that every time she goes to the restaurant with her dad, she has to wonder if this is going to happen. Not saying burn down the yes. White House. I'm not saying, you know, this is the Klan. I'm just saying it sucks that her and her dad have to go through with this. And to say, yeah, I agree that this sucks, does not have to have any further implications or like, I want affirmative action or Thurgood Marshall. It shouldn't be that hard to acknowledge. This really sucks.
Well, the problem is, and it's the same thing with the coronavirus talk. It's that people like to view things as binary.
Yeah.
And when you introduce nuance, it fucks them up and they try to put you into one of the binary categories. So, because that makes their life easier. So it's like, well, okay, so if you're saying that sucks, then you're saying racism is terrible and we need all of these problems. But like, no, you can go that it's like, yes, you have one side who's saying like, you don't know what it's like to be, you know, a Black guy walking in a department store and the store owner starts eyeing you down following him. And, you know, so racism is like this horrible problem. And then the other side goes, well, Black people are committing, you know, the disproportionate amount of the crime. So he was robbed by three Black people this week. And it's like, you could both be right. You can both be right. Yeah. He could have been robbed by three Black people this week. And he doesn't just hate Black people. He's looking at this guy because he's concerned that he's going to rob him too. But if that Black guy isn't going to rob you, it still sucks to be that guy who's getting looked at like you're a thief. So all of these things can be true. And with the, you know, the Me Too stuff, the point you were making about this power dynamic where people get off, where power corrupts and people get off on that power. That's also the exact same problem that the Me Too movement ended up happening, is that then we swung the power in this direction where women could just have the power to accuse anybody and say, believe all women and all this. And that power started corrupting on that side. It's the same kind of power dynamic on different ends of the equation that all are a problem. And I agree with you that these things happen. Like, anybody who doesn't think that there's a lot of men out there who are creeps and are shitty to women, I don't know what world you're living in, but it's not the same one that I've existed in. I've seen lots of examples of this in my life. However, it does seem a lot of times when people are being hypocrites on both sides, and let's be clear, that, like, as you were talking about with what Chris Hayes said, he didn't say anything that was the equal of what was said about Kavanaugh. I haven't heard anybody say so far, I'm not saying no one has, but I haven't heard anyone say, I believe her, this is disqualifying to Joe Biden, and we can't elect a sexual predator, or we can't nominate a sexual predator. So that, you know, I'm not getting that from a lot of people, but there's a lot of hypocrisy for the people who were gung-ho about ruining Kavanaugh, who want to bury this. There's also a lot of hypocrisy from people who said there's no evidence in the Kavanaugh thing and are not now saying this is a serious allegation against Joe Biden. And it's easy to call out everyone's hypocrisy. But after that's all done, which is important, I start to wonder, what is a reasonable standard to actually deal with these things? And one of the things that I find troubling is that people start claiming that things are evidence, which really does not seem to be legitimate evidence to me. Like, a lot of people were making a big deal out of this phone call into Larry King, or making a big deal out of, you know, she told people at the time. And I'm just, you know, certainly in a court of law, that wouldn't even be considered relevant evidence. I mean, it's circumstantial at best that you told someone something happened. That doesn't prove one way or the other that it's a lie or the truth.
Well, no, I think what it does disprove is that she's making it up now to fuck with him.
Okay,
that is a big one. And this is why I also defended Blasey Ford, and people in my mentions are flipping out, because apparently she told her husband when Kavanaugh was first appointed to the bench, this guy assaulted me. So that's why I'm not comfortable saying Blasey Ford's a flat-out liar. Because when he's a nobody, and she's supposedly, if this in fact happened, told her husband, then that's like, okay, maybe she's confusing two things, blah, blah. I got to tell you, I'm going to drop a bomb, and it's going to upset people, and I don't care. I don't think what Brett Kavanaugh is accused of doing is really that horrible.
Oh, no, I said like, the same thing.
It's like, this is what, in high school, he pins her to the bed. Like, what? It's not acceptable. It's not funny. It's not cool. It's gross. But 40 years later or 50 years later, this is the point, you can't still get on a plane. That's not on him. You do not have a blank check when you're a victim. And to use the word assault in this case is crazy. To just basically say anything bad is a function of this, because that's also, and let's take us away from politics. That is how anxiety and depression work. You get the anxiety or depression, then you find your brain finds some reason you're feeling that way, and it gives it a rational voice. That it's the opposite. Yes. It's like, you know, when you're depressed, you're always going to find something in your life that's not ideal, and that will be your mind giving you a reason to feel anxious or depressed. And it takes you a long time to realize your mind has that feeling first, and then it gives you an excuse so that you have to accept this emotion. It's very, very pernicious.
Yes, I talked about this when the Kavanaugh thing was going on. And I talked about this in my stand-up a little bit too, where I said, you know, if my wife was like, I went to a party last night and this guy threw me down on a bed and put his hand over my mouth, I'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to go find this guy and kill him. So that's going to happen. If my wife told me, I'm going to go hire my Puerto Rican friend to kill him. Yeah. He works for cheap.
Yeah, as they all do.
If my wife told me 15 years ago, a guy threw me down on a bed and put his hand over my mouth, and she'd be like, I want you to find him. I'd be like, baby, it's 15 years ago. Yeah. Like, he's married now. Like, I look him up on Facebook. I'm like, he's married. He's got kids. He's got a job. And this is 40 years ago. The idea that look, man, I mean, it's one thing if it's a rape or a really severe sexual assault, but to even bring something up like this 40 years ago, I understand this is somewhat of a judgment call, but yes, I agree with you. It's not, this shouldn't even be talked about. However, what Biden's accused of here is quite a bit more serious. But I do wonder, and I don't know exactly what the answer is to this, because as Me Too activists will often point out, and there's certainly more than a kernel of truth to it, they'll say, if somebody, you know, this isn't a court of law, the standard doesn't have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's true, fair enough. We're not talking about locking a human being in a cage. We may not need the same standard that we have in a court of law. However, just even removing politics completely from the equation, if somebody's just up for a job promotion and somebody comes to you and goes, that person assaulted me 10 years ago. Okay, maybe it's not the standard of a court of law, but don't I have to have some standard for when I'm going to decide in my mind to treat this person as if they're guilty of this? Doesn't there have to be some type of process? Does he have a, you know, not like a legally, you know, like codified right to face his accuser or defend himself, but isn't there, doesn't there have to be some type of process before I can decide that I'm going to treat this person or punish this person in a way as if they did this? And I don't know, I struggle with that, but I don't know exactly what the appropriate way to handle these things are. It's certainly not believe all women, and it's certainly not dismiss all women. Yeah. It's somewhere in between.
My approach is, I'm of the view that men who act like this, it's a pattern for them. That they will, it's not, it's like they're a kink, right? They're not going to do it just to one person, if they, especially if they get away with it. Because then it's like, look what I got away with. I'm going to do it again. I mean, it's really kind of sick in their head. And you see with people like Cosby, you see with people like Harvey Weinstein, and those are extreme examples. But I do think that the guy who's a date rapist at college, he's not doing it to one chick. Like, he gets a reputation pretty fast. So my point is, when they are this type, and this is, look, we have, since we have no telepathy and we have no time machines, we can't tell. You have to have some fairly objective rule for each of ourselves. My rule is, okay, is there a realistic pattern of this kind of behavior? And with Biden, from my evidence, the answer seems to be clearly no. With someone like Clinton, the answer seems to be clearly yes, or Cosby, that it's so many corroborating people. So that's kind of where I would kind of make my decision about these sorts of things.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable.
And the other thing is, we all know, we've all had that ex, and very quickly the relationship gets rewritten, and my definition of a sociopath is the guy who dumped you and doesn't care about your feelings. But that word gets thrown out a lot, and, you know, and people will, everyone's going to, well, you don't have any females listening to your show, but if any females listen to the show, they'd be like, how dare you? You girls know exactly what I'm talking about. Whenever the ex breaks up, he has to become the devil, and he manipulated you and he controlled you. Whereas when you guys are going out and he goes, let's go to this place. Oh, that sounds like fun. And it's not control. It's like he has choices, or else he's weak. And now you're pissed that, why do I have to make all these decisions? This is very known. And then people pretend it's not. It is very known.
No, absolutely.
That's how I approach it. So the other thing is, women are very known, women being human beings, to be vindictive and spiteful. Hell hath no fury. So when you give a woman or any human being a weapon that will allow them to have an enormous amount of revenge with little cost to themselves, some of them will use it. Not all, not even going to say many, some. And you have to be aware of what this happened to Zora Neale Hurston, one of my favorite writers from the Harlem Renaissance. Towards the end of her life, she was accused of sexually abusing a kid. She wasn't even in the country at the time. And it became a whole thing. She almost drove her to suicide, because, you know, if you're accused of something like this, imagine you're a dude accused of this, and you have to wonder, do my friends suspect that I might, maybe it's a gray area? Like, it's terrifying.
Well, particularly because most people are not having the conversation in the nuanced way that me and you are.
Yeah.
And most people are quite explicitly the opposite of nuanced. I mean, they will just say it's all rape, and basically all of these things are the same, which is really like horrible and doesn't help anybody's cause. And also, you know, look, one of the worst parts of the Me Too movement is that we've now created a situation that really does invite people to make up these type of stories, because you know that even with no evidence, an accusation is going to make huge news. It's going to be like this story. And as we said before, people do get off on power. And to have that type of power for someone who normally wouldn't, is a thrill. And you know, you're not allowed to bring this dynamic up when you're talking about the women. You're certainly allowed to bring it up, as you talked about before, if you're talking about the men who are shitty or even abusive or harass women, then you can talk about it all you want to, but you're not even allowed to, you know, publicly entertain the idea that someone like Christine Ford might be on some psychological level getting something out of that whole experience that she had. And that doesn't mean, because people are complex creatures, that doesn't mean that she's sitting at home going, I'm getting something out of this. It means that on some level, she is, you know, people would be like, oh my God, she seemed so nervous and terrified to be in front of the cameras. And you're like, well, then she could easily not be. Like, if she didn't want to be, she could just not be there. And she could just let the thing from 40 years ago go, or have it be between her and her therapist. She put herself in this position to be here testifying before a Senate, you know, a confirmation hearing. So you just wonder what some of these people are getting out of it. And you wonder if we haven't created a magnet for anybody to, you know, accuse someone of something. And then what often happens is what was her name? Swetnick, that one.
Julie Swetnick, yeah.
That then you get a few more crazies just making shit up that latch onto it. And then you go, so you have this one woman, Christine Ford, who's got a story, could have happened, we don't really know. Then you've got two more crazy bitches who come along attached, and now it's like, well, there's three accusations.
Yeah.
So, hey, look at this. I mean, it's a wash. Not a wash, but it's a wrap.
So one of the like rough metrics, one axis of left versus right is, do you think people are basically good or basically bad? And in this sense, right wingers are those who have the cynical view of nature, and lefties have either a naive or, you know, Pollyanna or a kind version of human nature. But there is a huge segment of people on the left, and I mean Democrats, just like left wing in their orientation from a psychological level, who not only cannot wrap their head around the idea that human beings respond to incentives, but find that even the suggestion of that is tantamount to being Hitler. And it is so offensive to their sensibilities that a single human being would, let alone groups of humans, would respond to incentives. They can't, it just makes them lose their minds. But and this is also what's funny when people talk about anarchism and they say, oh, you guys are anarchism won't work because you're all utopians. You think you have this idea of human nature, that humans are basically good. I'm like, the only anarchist time anarchism and utopia go hand in hand is when someone is criticizing anarchism. Like, no anarchist thinks it's, I love it when they tell me, Mr. North Korea, oh, your version of human nature, you just don't think human beings are capable of evil. I'm like, yeah, okay, buddy. That's me. You got me in a nutshell. But this is a thing that it's very hard for people to wrap their heads around, to even throw out there, that if you create an incentive that if I do this, this, and that, I'm going to get accolades or cred or social status, that some people are going to glom onto this, that's just fallacious.
Oh, I agree. And by the way, that criticism, for whatever reason, it drives me the most crazy when it's coming from minarchist libertarians who really like to, they will hand in hand say, well, listen, there's never really been an example of the type of anarchy that you advocate for, right? Like, we've never had an anarchist society. So it's utopian to believe that we could have this anarchist society. And to the first point, okay, fair enough. You could certainly argue that there's never been an anarchist society in the way that we would really want there to be one. There's been things that are close, but certainly I'll acknowledge that. But for a minarchist to then say that from that, I draw the position that you're being utopian, it's like, okay, so explain to me when there's been a minarchist society and the government has remained small and not grown to some huge, and they'll
within
give you
minutes,
things like,
within minutes violated the Constitution, the Alien Sedition Act,
And right, and then they'll give you examples like, well, the United States of America, you know, like started off as a slavery. It's like, yeah, if you can get past codifying slavery into law, they were a pretty minarchist government. And then if you get past the fact that from the go, it was like, let's expand as much as we can, and it resulted in the biggest, most powerful government that humanity has ever known. And so it's just really funny to go like, oh, well, you to accuse someone else of being utopian. Wait.
And it's even funnier is that, well, if everyone listens to the Constitution, then it would work. It's like, so this isn't a utopia where everyone is sitting down and thinks the same way that you do? Like, what right. planet is that on?
So it's not utopian to think that a piece of paper is going to stop powerful people from exercising their power. And to hope that those powerful people themselves will be a check on their own power.
Right.
I mean, the idea, even the Constitution is incredibly flawed. I mean, there's a whole bunch of flaws in there, but probably one of the biggest ones, Rothbard really nailed this. But the whole idea of the Supreme Court being the branch of government that will check the power of the other two branches, yet they have to be appointed and confirmed by the other two branches. I mean, there's just such an obvious flaw in there to begin with. I mean, why should if the whole idea of the Supreme Court is they're going to tell you when Congress writes a law that oversteps their constitutional bounds and the president signs that law into power, yet the president appoints the judges and the Senate has to confirm the judges. I mean, that's the most obvious conflict of interest ever. And so what a shocker, the Supreme Court has allowed the government to become bigger and bigger and bigger. Yes, no, minarchists are far more utopian than anarchists.
Yeah, because we're not, the way I look at it, people are like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I look at it like curing cancer. If I cure cancer, things are going to be a lot better. There's going to be murder. There's going to be rape. People are going to beat their kids. People are going to be drunks. People are going to be out of work. There's going to be pandemics. I'm just saying this will solve one fundamental totally evil problem in our culture. That's it. And that's not a huge claim. And so it's like, oh, so you're saying if you cure cancer, no one's ever going to die? No. You're saying you cure cancer, no one's going to beat their wife? Not saying that either.
Saying curing cancer is better than not curing cancer.
That's it.
That's yeah. the claim.
And that there's no real minuses other yeah. than the oncologists are out of work. And I'm sure they'll find out. I'm sure they'll learn to code.
Right, exactly.
They're very bright men and women, but mostly men.
Well, you said very bright.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Let's transition into a whole new topic.
Okay. Because
I have to ask you about this. I don't know that you're going to have any particular insight into this because it's very hard to get any real facts, but I can't not ask you because you're my North Korea guy. What the fuck is going on with your boy? Is he dead, alive? Is he stronger than ever? Has he beaten the coronavirus?
He's not dead. We know he's not dead. Yeonmi Park, who's one of the most famous refugees, had this tweet, which I retweeted, where she says, according to her sources, he's just in hiding because of coronavirus. And this
so he's scared.
He's right to be scared. I mean, what's the upside? Like, he needs his approval rating is still going to be 100%. He doesn't need like Trump to have these rallies. He can have whenever he wants. Everyone wears his family's love belt in.
Oh my God, he just disappeared. This guy's never going to get reelected.
Yeah, right. Like what? Yeah. So they have satellite footage of him on his private beach, or you know, this movement on his beach. North Korea, I say this many times, has this magic device which causes everyone to have amnesia. This isn't the first time he's vanished for like a month at a time. This happened a few years ago. I think it was 2014 or 2017. And they said later he had gout, but he was gone for a month. And then we're like, is he dead? He's dead. After Kim Jong-il took over in 2011 from his father, 1994, he wasn't seen in public for like 3 years. It was like they didn't know if he was alive or dead because he was locking things down behind the scene, really. So this is not uncommon. Someone's like, oh my God, you know, he missed two things in a row. This is unprecedented. That means he must be dead. It's like, hey, you know what's unprecedented? 8 million New Yorkers in their house. It's like, I was like, well, everything else is normal everywhere else on Earth. I'm like, this is a country with like no healthcare system. And you're like, I wonder why this guy isn't in Kim Il-sung Square where people are literally hand in hand doing dances. Like, I mean, seriously? So he's going to be fine. The thing is, there's a hospital system in North Korea dedicated specifically to prolonging longevity of the leader, whoever that happens to be. This claim that, you know, he died on the table or he's brain dead. When is the last time, no matter how obese you are? Yeah, he's obese, but like a 36-year-old billionaire is going to die. You know, that doesn't happen in a medical situation. I said this before in other places. If they had to, those doctors would operate on, they said their doctors' hands were shaking. It did not happen. If that would have happened, those doctors would have operated on a healthy person or several just to make sure they got it down before they did it to him. They're not taking risks. Right. And these are doctors. I mean, this isn't, they're not taking someone fresh from, like, you know, Kim Il-sung Medical School being like, all right, you're going into the leader's heart. These are going to be very experienced professionals, and they would fly in the best from all around the world because the price is no object. So I'm glad you asked, because there's a lot of, to quote the very failed podcaster, Tom Woods, your Facebook friends are wrong about Kim Jong-un. They don't know what they're talking about, and it's okay. Like, this, one of the things I hate about democracy, and I'm sure you agree, is this premise that everyone has to have an opinion on everything. You don't. Sit down and shut up. Worry about your family. Worry about what you're good at. And it's not your concern, other than having some empathy, perhaps, or sympathy with the North Korean population, to know what's the latest going on in Asia, because you don't know what's going on in South America. You can't name those countries. It's okay.
And the thing that I hate about democracy is that it creates that environment only for politics, whereas human beings don't act this way in any other field. I mean, maybe some people do, but that's like a narcissistic person who's like very damaged. Like, normal people do not act like they don't. You don't sit there and go, you know, Con Ed is using this type of power grid, but I really think that maybe they should switch over to this power grid, when you have no idea what you're talking about. Right. You simply, we're all comfortable just going, I don't fucking understand the power grid. I don't know. I assume people who do understand it are doing it. Right. I don't have an opinion on open heart surgery. I have no fucking idea. Like, and this is the nature of being a human being, and specialization, and the division of labor. We only know, you know, we're lucky if we're really competent in two things. Most people don't even have that. So, but when it comes to politics, all of a sudden, everyone's got to have an opinion on the minimum wage and healthcare and banking.
And North Korean succession.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know who's going to take over. You can only name one other person. You don't even know her name. So sit down and shut up.
It's very difficult. Very difficult for people to figure that one out. All right.
Because they're also told since elementary school that you're a bad person if you're not keeping up with current events, which is also a lie, because it's very interesting how there's certain countries that we're supposed to be fixated on, and there's, what, 180 countries in the world? We don't know anything that's going on in any of them. Yes. I just tweeted out today, the head of El Salvador, I think it was, or Honduras, one of the two, what he's been doing is he's been rounding up gangsters and making them strip down their underwear, stacking them on top of each other, taking pictures of them and putting them on social media to shame them. He's also locking gangsters from rival gangs in cells together in hopes that, you know, they beat each other up. That came out, but it's like, yeah, there's a lot of countries and lots of shit's going down a lot of them. And you are only being fixated on the ones that the corporate press has decided you should be fixated on. Now, North Korea, I don't blame them, because they're nuclear. They're an antagonist to America. They've captured and detained Americans. We had the Korean War. There's a history there. But don't pretend that just because you read The New Yorker, you are up on worldly affairs. No, you are up on, it's very much Plato's cave. You're given a specific segment about what's important. So now you can look at your friend who doesn't know about that two countries that have been deemed important and be like, you don't know what's going on in Sweden? You're an idiot. Yeah, what's going on in Denmark, asshole? You don't know. So shut up.
Yes. Well, speaking of what's going on in Sweden, I think Sweden has become the most free market country in the world.
Really?
Ironically, for Sweden has been open this whole time. Sweden, that's it. Sweden went in 2 months from being Bernie Sanders' example to being my example.
They are Aryans, so you know it's going to be great for that level.
I mean, yeah. No, I'm just saying, I'm letting out my inner self-hating Jew here. Holy shit, Sweden. I mean, sure, they got universal healthcare, but, you know, you're allowed to leave your house. That's pretty libertarian of them right there. And by the way, the Sweden example is really starting to be some pretty major evidence that this whole lockdown was not the right way to go. I mean, I know I've been, you know, kind of beating this drum for a little while now, but it is the huge thing going on, so it's pretty hard to not talk about. But so Sweden has basically dealt with a similar level of coronavirus and deaths that the rest of Europe has. Maybe slight, very, very slight uptick from some other countries, but really nothing major. And it's kind of starting to indicate that perhaps, which is really a tough thing to think about, but perhaps the lockdown didn't actually help mitigate the virus,
right.
Which kind of on a surface level can make sense, because everybody's still going to the grocery stores. There's still enough essential workers out there that, you know, like there's a lot of people still intermingling. The lockdown can't be 100% effective. Some people won't follow it. And the virus is very contagious. So it's still kind of spreading anyway. And we just got a new round earlier today of unemployment claims. There was another 4 million added. Oof. So we're up now to
4 million. That's a huge number.
The total, this is just in a week, 4 million were added. The total number is 30 million.
That's crazy.
30 million people have filed for unemployment insurance. This is not total unemployment. This is just people who are filing for unemployment insurance. This does not include people who don't qualify for unemployment insurance. This does not include people who were working under the table.
Can I get full lefty? Can sure. I get full lefty? And I know this will piss off some of your audience, and I'm more than happy to do that. I really do feel bad for that illegal immigrant busboy who doesn't want to go back to his shithole country, who's not a criminal, and now he's kind of screwed. And yeah, you could say, oh, you should have broken law and come here. Fair enough. The point is the consequences of this when he was just doing a shitty menial job and now he's really in a world of hurt. This is the time where I'm like, yeah, I really feel for those people.
Oh, yeah, no, at 100%. And, you know, like I've said for a while, and I've changed, you know, my position on immigration over the years. I'm actually a lot more sympathetic to immigration restrictions. And I think, you know, and I've been over this, that I think it is fairly consistent with being an anarchist. And truthfully speaking, when the government runs the borders, open borders or closed borders, either one is pretty anti-libertarian. It's a government program either way. I actually just earlier today recorded, I had like a debate / discussion with Jen Monroe, Jen the Libertarian, on this topic. And she's very open borders and I'm really not. But I've always said throughout all of this that even like hardcore Trump supporter build the wall people, you can have that opinion and also have empathy for people who are sitting in cages and also have empathy for people who are in shithole countries who would want to do anything they can to get out and come here. It doesn't have to be binary. You can be like, it sucks that we can't let you in, but I feel for you in your situation.
If I had a magic wand, I would like it to be better for you. And it really does. I it's not like I don't give a fuck. I care. I don't care enough to actually, you know, open the borders, but it's not like this is something that gives me pleasure.
Right. There's no problem with that. And certainly to feel for somebody who, you know, came from, you know, just incredibly impoverished, you know, traumatic background, made it over here to this country, is working a shit job and is just now losing everything. I mean, I don't know, like that's a pretty basic empathy test to me. You should be able to pass.
Oh, right. There should be a little bit of proportionality. It's like, okay, this person sucked. He broke the law. There's other people in line, blah, 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 and all that other good stuff. He deserves to be condemned. Fine. For the sake of argument, I'll meet you there. And maybe even not for the sake of argument. I'm like, I don't care about someone. He's a cheater. But if the worst of his crimes is that he's got a shitty job, and the consequence of this is that his entire life is ruined, to just shrug your shoulder and be like, well, you knew what you were getting yourself into. No, that doesn't cut ice with me.
Well, one of the reasons why I did the debate with Jen and why I thought immigration, I just think immigration is a really important issue to talk about, particularly right now. I have a feeling that there's going to be a real, and I think this is going to help Trump politically. Obviously, immigration was the center of his 2016 campaign, and there were a lot of people who were really on board with that. Now, also, it was the center of the opposition for Donald Trump, and so there's a lot of people who were against that. But I just look at this, whether fair or unfair, after having a virus pandemic that came in from another country, I think people's instincts are going to be more tighten than loosen in terms of immigration. And also the fact that you're going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 million people all of a sudden kicked out of work. Again, whether fair or unfair, I think many people's reaction is going to be, yeah, what are we, insane? We want to bring more workers into the country right now.
Right.
Like we don't have enough for ourselves. And what I think is more fair is that, you know, it's like, really, are any taxpayer dollars going to help other people from other countries when our own countrymen are hurting so bad right now. So I think that, you know, now is going to be a tough time to be an open borders advocate, and libertarians better at least learn how to talk to people who have these concerns without just telling them they're fucking racists or something like that, because that's not going to work.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said completely.
Yeah, there's, you know, anyway, I've you know, whatever, I talked about that a little bit before. Hey, our mutual friend, the very failed podcaster, Tom Woods, I saw on Facebook the other day, checked in at a restaurant in Atlanta. He went to Morton's Steakhouse in Atlanta.
Yeah, he texted me,
Oh, I was jealous. I love Morton's. Morton's is delicious.
Steaks are always delicious. Yeah, I've been to one here. Yeah, it's
one here is just fucking great. God damn it. I would love to go to a nice steakhouse sometime soon. So you said the sushi joint and the gym. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to when the lockdown ends, particularly? Those are your things.
Those are my two things, and I'll be fine. Everything I've got a pretty good bunker in my house already, so I'm set with that.
All right. Well, Michael Malice, what has been your favorite part of this lockdown?
My favorite part has been reaching out with my people and having much more mutual support and strengthening those bonds. That has really been something that's I found very rewarding.
Well, you're are welcome. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. Peace.
Take care, guys.